by Mutos, Dregs, Primords, Field Major Styre of the Sontaran Empire, and the bandaged-faced Traffic Warden from Threads. You shelter below ground, waiting for rad levels to drop to safe levels, alone, with nothing more than minimal food rations. And somewhat improbably, 5 stories from the Doctor Who universe in any medium. TV, audio, film, novel, comic book. These artifacts, though you're only linked to the past, maybe for the rest of your life. Welcome to The Bunker, a Doctor Who podcast from Cutaway Comics, brought to you by Bamalan Productions. And now, here's your host, Ian Winterton.
Hello and welcome to the Cutaway Bunker. Fittingly, for the opening episode of our new season, my guest today is the primary reason why I decided to set forth into the slightly unhinged and overly obsessed world of Doctor Who podcasting. One of the best known podcasters in fandom, he's the man behind Doctor Who Pod's Nine Mumby Praised, Finish Big, and the show that first got me hooked, the brilliantly named Hamster with a Blunt Penknife, and its spin-off, the Hamster Book Club. As well as his Who output, he's also the man behind acclaimed Star Trek pod, Untitled Star Trek Podcast, and the new venture, an episode-by-episode study of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, with co-host Martin Havel of Bad Wolf Productions. Joe, welcome to the bunker.
Hello! I'm extremely happy to be here.
Did I get any of that wrong? Did I get any of that wrong?
You make me feel very famous, even though I'm not at all.
Well,
Fame
is just other people knowing who you are, and lots of people in our in fandom know who you are.
No one knows who I am, don't worry.
They do. I say, oh, you know, I was at the BFI the other day, and I was like, oh, we're doing the thing with, you know, Hamster with a Blunt Penknife. Everybody, all the big Finnish people knew exactly who you were.
Oh, they don't, do they? Because I say terrible things about them on my Finnish Big podcast.
So I'm going to start off. You've got your 5 choices. It's weird. They're not at all what I expected from listening to you. But we'll get into those in a minute. I'm going to ask you the question I've heard you ask other people millions of times, and you've probably answered it a few times yourself. Mm. But how did Doctor Who come into your life and take it over? When did it take it over?
Very young. 2 doors down from me was a fella called Paul Quinn. And I've recently just got back in touch with him as well, actually. He did one of my book club episodes recently. And he was already a fan, a couple of years older. He had the Doctor Who program guide, and he used to read me out the synopses of the program guide. I'm not kidding you right now. Any Doctor Who story sounded amazing in that book to my sort of 5-6-year-old ears. So he planted the seed. I saw Battlefield episode 2. This is a story I'll peddle out a lot, but I was only allowed to watch that one episode that I saw, because at the end of that episode, I was convinced that Ace was dead in that tank of water that she's in, trying to bash her way out. And my mum figured that I was a bit too young to be watching this. And 9 years old. Can you believe that? 9 years old then and now are 2 very different things. Because 9-year-olds now can handle a lot more. But she said, no, you can watch it next year. And yes, it was cancelled at the end of the year. So Paul started getting the VHSs. So I started watching those with him. Then I started buying them. Then the DVDs. Then Big Finish. Then the Blu-rays. I mean, it was about 15 years from 89 onwards of unearthing this show, the books, all of it, and doing this enormous archaeology of putting together the story of Doctor Who in my head. Some would say it's been a waste of a life. I would say it has been my great work, and it continues to this day. So this is all part of that process, this podcast.
Yeah, some people go and stand in a cold football ground every Saturday, and that's fine. But we do this.
I think that's
it's a similar thing.
Standing in a football ground watching men running around in shorts is a perfectly valid way of spending your life.
It's all valid, but we shouldn't feel... You know, they don't feel ashamed. We shouldn't feel ashamed. We're just doing a different kind of weird fanny thing.
I did have that period, though, you know, in my mid to late teens of like, oh, I'm a bit better than this now. And all this is a bit embarrassing. Before the new series came on.
Yeah.
I never abandoned Doctor Who, because then the Big Finish audio started up and I was reading the novels as well. but like, you know, that sort of 95 to 2005 period of this is a has-been show now that's a little bit spoken very quietly and embarrassingly in, you know, corners of the Fitzroy Tavern. But I got over it and I'm still here.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was weird. It was a sort of secret shame, wasn't it? It was like a, it's like Gatiss and RTD sort of said this thing about it was like circling around, like in the old days, circling around the fact that somebody else in the office might be gay like you were, kind of thing. But with Doctor Who. So you'd drop in little bits and go, He just recognized my Dalek.
And, you should say that, you know, because I used to be far less embarrassed to admit that I was gay than I was to admit I was a Doctor Who fan.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had friends that used to come over and I would clear out my DVDs from the living room and hide them in the bedroom. It didn't last long. Like, I got over myself.
But I think that's another Russell thing, isn't it? That he says the character he writes in Queer as Folk is very much a lot like him. And he, in real life, used to, when he brought a bloke home, used to push his Dalek into the cupboard to hide it. So because he was so embarrassed by it.
Now, so, age 43, if I had a Dalek, you know, in my house, the people would see it the second they walked in the door.
I'd never be out of it if I had a Dalek.
In fact, you know what you see when you walk in my house? You see floor to ceiling, Big Finish CDs. There's an enormous bookcase.
Yeah.
People go in and go, wow, what's that? Okay, that's my Doctor Who audio collection. Isn't it amazing? You know.
And they're like, wow.
Loser.
Well done, Joe. No, we should avoid the cultural cringe because it's just a form of fandom, and fandom takes many, many forms.
Have you ever had the conversation with anybody in your life, you know, where you say to them, they're not a fan, and you say, oh, I do a podcast, and they say, oh, how interesting, what about? And you say, oh, Doctor Who. And, you know, most people say to me, sort of look me up and down and go, why?
I suppose it's great. Suppose it depends who you're talking to. I mostly hang out with, like, writers. So everyone, Doctor Who is, I'm hanging out with people who are writing Doctor Who or Doctor Who-related stuff a lot. But even if I'm not, Doctor Who is, like, the DNA of so many writers in Britain. Like, that's why I'm a writer. Even if they're not, like, a mad fan, they still get excited when they get to do anything Doctor Who-related or they meet someone off Doctor Who. So they're kind of fan-adjacent if they're not actually fans. And same with actors, same with all manner of creatives.
I would be very suspicious of a writer if you gave them the Doctor Who premise of you can go anywhere, anytime, and tell any genre of story, and they shied away from that. Because it's just ripe for creativity, isn't it, that premise?
Oh, God, I mean, that's why it's still going. It's absolute genius. It is.
It is. Madman
in a box, all of time and space. It's amazing. Where did podcasting come from then? Did it come out of your online reviewing? Because you've been sort of active online, from what I can tell, since the internet started. Well, not since 1968, but you know what I mean. Since the World Wide Web.
I started scribbling in the Doctor Who Ratings Guide, which is run by Stacey Smith, and met a few friends there. Then I started my own podcast during a sort of a bit of a tricky spell in my life. So I wasn't working for about 6 months and I needed something. So I wanted a project. And so I decided to take a very nice approach of just reviewing Big Finish stories. And I did, you know, can you believe that? I reviewed every Big Finish story.
Wow. And
for some people, that's a life's work, isn't it?
I mean, is that not impossible now?
Well, I mean, the website's there. Doc Oho Reviews, go and find it.
Have you kept it up? Because I was going to say, because was that like 20 years ago?
Yeah, I'd need a second bloody mortgage to afford all the ones they bring out these days, wouldn't I?
I was going to say, because they've really, you know, the stuff they bring out is, you know, something every day almost, isn't it? It seems.
It is. So the blog, that really took off. Like, it became quite popular. And podcasting came out of the pandemic. So it was just the fact that I couldn't go out and see people. I'm quite a sociable person. And so I thought, well, I'm going to do something where I bring Hamster is where I started. I thought I'm going to bring people on, a different person for each episode, find the story they love, and then we'll celebrate it. And the joy of it is somebody out there loves every Doctor Who story. Everyone you think is appalling, I don't know, Twin Dilemma or something like that. There's a fan out there that's willing to wave the flag for it.
I've not found the Twin Dilemma fan yet, but I know what you mean. Doing this podcast, I'm quite surprised
Yeah, I bet you were surprised myself. Some of the things I'm like,
you've got five choices, and that's one of them, which I may be saying to you later, Joe.
It's a fabulous premise, by the way, this podcast. This is really unique.
I mean, it's Desert Island Disc, so I can't really take much credit.
No, but it really makes it to knuckle down to five. That really does make you think.
Yeah,
so I go, I mean, I was wrestling for about half a day.
Oh, really? That's cool. Yeah, no, it is. If you take it seriously, like most people do, then it's a good little mind game to go. Sort of like, do you ever remember the game Apples and Onions, where you live in a world without apples or without onions, and then you pick two things? So you go, would you live without the Beatles or the Stones? Would you live without the Smiths or the, you know, or anything you can pick? And then if you take it really seriously, you really find out, like, something about you. Like, I remember a Liverpoolian friend of mine was just... we asked him, would you rather live without the Beatles or the Smiths? And he was just like, for hours, just going, tearing his brain apart. And then he went, and at the end of it, he went, like a dolly zoom on the beach on Jaws. And he went, I've just found out I like the Smiths more than the Beatles. And he just like blew his head.
That's a great game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Music's a tricky one, though. Music, you have such an emotional response to music.
Oh, yeah. It's the same with Doctor Who for us, isn't it?
If you said to me, you know, what could you live without the Chase or Time and the Rani? I mean, I'd still be there in a week's time trying to figure that one out.
Well, that's why I've noticed quite a lot of people go, it's going to have to be the Five Doctors then. So that's popped up a lot because it's got a bit of everything in it.
Well, you didn't get the Five Doctors from me, baby.
No, I was quite pleased. I was quite pleased. I might have to have a moratorium on Five Doctors and Rob Sheerman.
I can understand.
And Rob Sheerman's Dalek, because that comes up a lot.
Oh, quite right. That's amazing as well.
I mean, it might be on mine if I ever did this. Anyway, so online reviewing and podcasting. And I think what it is with your... For anyone who hasn't heard you podcast, I'd say go and listen to Joe's podcast. You're so enthusiastic. You deliberately have chosen to be... you know, celebratory about Doctor Who, a bit like Toby Haydock's podcast as well, like, which is, it's very easy to be bitchy and awful, but, you know, Doctor Who is full of so many sour people anyway. Why?
We joined forces quite a bit, you know, me and Toby. We've done a fair number to get off.
I know. Yeah. Now. Well, I've listened to them all. Yeah. I'm hoping to get him on here, actually. I must say.
Oh, he'd love it. Doing this, you know, mind you, it'd take him a year to knuckle down his five.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a hard choice. He'd probably be like, well, I could have all the Quatermass in the world and Five Doctor Who.
It literally sounded like he was in the room there.
Yeah. I don't know Toby that well, but I've obviously, because I'm based in Manchester or near Manchester, then I've sort of crossed paths with him quite a few times. I had dinner with Toby and Peter Purvis and somebody who was so old and I can't remember his name. Toby will just know it's like that. But he was like in a Hartnell story and he was really old at this con with his carer there. And, oh God, I can't remember his name. Anyway.
That's it. Now you can't remember that actor's name. You have scuppered any chance of Toby Haydock coming on this podcast now.
I know. I might have to edit that bit out. But yeah, yeah. But that was the, you know, you sit there going, having a chat with people from Hartnell Doctor Who and, you know, and Peter Purvis, and it's just that, and Toby Haydock.
Do you know, you talked about there about accentuating the positive with Doctor Who? Well, because I think the easier approach is to be clickbaity and to slag things off, because there's a huge following, but I won't name anybody, but there's a huge following for people out there that rip at Doctor Who and the woke agenda and all this stuff on YouTube, on podcasts and things like that. And they've got massive followings and people love it, you know.
I fucking hate those guys.
Like, yeah, me too.
Any of them. I don't know exactly who you're talking about, but just in general, I hate those people.
My response to that was like, well, let's go in the other direction. Let's really find out why we love this show. Let's celebrate it. So the result of that is people love coming on because they love talking about stuff love. And the even better result of that is the community that built around Hamster, and there's a big community around it now, and it's just full of the best people, just kind, funny, positive people. So that's been the it was a good move,
because you're so enthusiastic, it's probably hard to build an impression of what your favorite eras are. So I was quite, because you love it, I mean, I guess you genuinely love it all or can find something to love in all of it, so I would never have expected what has come out in your five choices to come out, really. So
I didn't expect the Wedding of River Song to be on there either, you know. No, it's not.
I think that's the only one I've ever heard you be consistently bitchy about, the Wedding of River Song.
Well, it's that era. But then to respond to my dislike of it, I invite on a ton of people that love it, and then they basically tell me why I'm wrong. Yeah. And that's always fun, you know.
I think it's also... It's all right to like criticize things. It's when people criticize things and they do it in a way like the people who are responsible for this, you know, should be ashamed of themselves. Like, do you know how hard it is to make a television program?
they don't owe you anything.
And they also made some creative choices you don't approve of. That doesn't mean they're bad. It just means it wasn't for you.
And it is a very bizarre
thing
in fandom now, isn't it, where there's this sort of ownership of the show, if it doesn't fit their worldview of the show, then they need to tell everybody, you know, online.
Twitter's such a mixed bag. I mean, it's brought me so many in contact with so many amazing people, but then I had to sort of sit there today looking at a thread, just couldn't tear my eyes away from a bunch of fans talking about why Chibnall was actually an evil centrist. And not left wing enough.
I spent my day
and I'm like, fucking, it's Doctor Who.
I spent my day down the park, you know, feeding the ducks with my other half. I'd say I had a better day than that.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I didn't spend long on it, but you know what Twitter's like? You just go, oh, why am I scrolling down this horrible
spinning that
thread
around though? Like did a massive favor for me when, like, we met obviously via Twitter, and you got me in touch with Stephen Gallagher.
Well, I was thinking of that, yeah.
And I got to interview this guy who created a show that was a massive part of my childhood. And so the thrill I got from that, without Twitter, that never would have happened.
Yeah, well, I said that at the time, didn't I? It was, fuck Elon Musk. Like, just because the new landlord's an absolute dobber.
Yeah.
I'm not leaving the village.
It's often the case, you know.
Yeah, often. Yeah, yeah, no, Steve Gallagher's it's just been amazing to work with him through Cutaway.
He's so erudite, isn't he?
Yeah, but just as you were mentioning bugs on Twitter, we'd literally just been filming stuff and his amazing study, his writing room, which is just full of amazing books and DVDs, and he's got a little, well, not that little, of all the stuff he's actually written. I mean, amongst them was Bugs. I was like, I've never really watched Bugs because I was the wrong age.
Oh, man.
So I'm gonna go
Doctor Who of the 90s that wasn't there, you know. It had that vibe.
I was the wrong age. I'm 10 years older than you, aren't I? And so I was too busy getting disco damaged. And,
he didn't just do the podcast. Then afterwards, he messaged me the next day, totally unprompted, and said, "Here's a copy of my first script from Bugs. If you want to give that out as an extra to people, do it." And I was just like, "That's amazing!"
He is so lovely. But
I feel a bit bad that Warrior's Gate isn't on this list, you know, because I do genuinely love Warrior's Gate.
I know. Yeah, no, Warriors Gates, I think it's popped up on a couple. It's one of those that's been growing over the years, Warriors Gate. Sadly, not Terminus.
Well, I know a few people, you know, someone came on mine and did Terminus and had lovely things to say about it. So.
Well, I think there's lots, you know, I think it's just, it was a brilliant script. Steve's amazing, brilliant writer. And he was so young then. And now he's written a comic for us. And I'm continuing his character. I will just say, since this is a Cutaway podcast.
You're listening to The Bunker from Cutaway Comics, publisher of creator-owned comics based on characters and stories set in the Doctor Who universe. For more on Cutaway, visit cutawaycomics.co.uk or follow us on Twitter at Cutaway Universe.
Yeah, so... First choice. Well, you sent them in an order. I've kind of mixed the order around. But
okay. There was no particular order. It was just
No. But first up, we've got Trial of a Time Lord, the VHS box set. You're very specific about that.
That's right. It's got to be the VHS.
So I guess in this bunker, you've got your cat food rations, and you've also got a VCR and a DVD player and a Blu-ray.
I do.
And a light to read some books. But yeah, so Trial of a Time Lord VHS box set. I mean, I'm allowing this, even though it's four distinct adventures. Mm. But there's so much Doctor Who that allowing a series especially a short one like this, doesn't feel.
You say this is four distinct adventures, but it is all called The Trial of a Time Lord, isn't it?
It is, and I think when it went out, it does say episode 14 at the end, doesn't it?
Mm.
So,
yeah.
So in a way, it is.
I know. I saw you doing your research on Twitter. I thought, oh, bless him, he's watching the Ultimate Foe episode 2.
I know. Well, I was going to say, I have a really bad time with this era of Doctor Who. Like, okay. Because of my age, I was 14 when this was on. So Doctor Who, being known as a Doctor Who fan, because I didn't hide it when I went to school, because I was an idiot. And so everyone knew I was like the only Doctor Who fan in the whole of the comprehensive, just about. In fact, I probably was. I didn't have like friends that liked it or anything. I was literally the only person in about 1,500 kids that I knew like Doctor Who. So if anything to do with Doctor Who happened, I was the one getting the piss taken out of me. So anyway, I might have to lie down on the couch
I didn't realize this was going to become a therapy session, mind you. I've got a story behind all these things.
Well, like, yeah. So when this era happened, like I just wasn't ready for Davison to leave, even though I hadn't got over Tom. And then it was an era when everyone was just taking the piss out of Doctor Who. It was a joke, an absolute joke in the wider culture. Doctor Who by this point was an utter joke, and when it got cancelled, I remember being glad. I just remember going, fine, it was good and it used to be good and now it isn't. That's how I felt about it. And I still, you know, I've recorded with Colin Baker, who's a great actor and I love him, but I just cannot get on with this era because I think I'm psychologically scarred from it.
Wow, the coat, I mean, baffling choice for you then.
Yeah, the coat, the everything, just everything about it was like, there was so much stuff people could just go, you like Doctor Who? Have you seen the state of it? Have you seen his coat? You know. Have you seen how cheap it looks now? And you can't go, well, actually, it's quite well written. And they're doing a good job despite the BBC trying to kill it. You know, none of...
argument does not hold water, though, because it wasn't that well written either. So
No, well, that's another thing I would say. But anyway, that's where I am. But Vervoids, I like, and I remember liking it at the time. And Mind Warp, I recently watched while we were recording a commentary with Brian Blessed. So I've you know, Mind Warp I quite like, and Vervoids I quite like, but I did rewatch, as you said, The Ultimate Foe for the first time since broadcast, and I wasn't a massive fan of it. But
how utterly evil.
I know.
To say that.
I know. But this is your choice, so defend yourself. What have you got to say for yourself, Joe?
I can't imagine why you were embarrassed by Doctor Who being fronted by a psychotic Ronald McDonald. I mean, nothing to be embarrassed by at all there. This came out in 1993. And to give you a little picture of where I was in 93, my dad had just gone to prison. My sister had just had a breakdown and our lives fell apart completely. Yeah,
I mean, this is a third.
Yeah, I know. I was 13 years old and you shouldn't be going through that at 13 year old. You know, literally the floor had fallen out from under my life. And during that time, the Trial of a Time Lord VHS box set came out and I was always excited for Doctor Who videos coming out, but this was like an entire season coming out in one wallop. And whilst I watched this, I completely forgot about what was going on in my life. I was completely absorbed in the stories. There was a fantastic sort of morally upright, emotionally explosive and very charming Doctor at the heart of it all. There was crazy, colourful stories going on, lots of melodrama, which, you know, is my life. But no, it meant so much to me because for however long that is, 5 hours of watching that, I forgot about the terrible things that were going on in my life. And I watched it again and again and again. And I think this is something that Doctor Who fans have with stuff that they watched when they were young, that they watched a lot. They can acknowledge now that actually that's not the best Doctor Who there is. Mm. You know, I know someone who adores Death to the Daleks because he watched it when he was 6 years old, like 100 times. So you can tell him till you're blue in the face, it's shit. And that's a Hoover attachment on a string. And the music sounds like something from a porn movie and all of this. But he loves it. And this is why I love the Trial of a Time Lord box set. It was because the magic of Doctor Who managed to make my life better for sort of 5 hours during a really turbulent, probably the worst time of my life. So now when I watch Trial of a Time, I just have warm feelings about it. I acknowledge it's too long. It's illogical. There's some bad casting going on in there. It's not the best writing from any of the script writers there, except Pip and Jane Baker, maybe. I mean, they're just brilliant. Have you heard their dialogue? You know? every time I meet you, Ian, I find myself trapped in a web of mayhem and intrigue. You know, they're geniuses. No, I love it because it was very kind to me when I was a child.
And yeah,
for no more reason than that. It's not the best season of Doctor Who, but it is the season I have the most nostalgic affection for. So yeah, it's the only VHS of Doctor Who that I've still got. I've got the Blu-rays now and the DVDs. I've got rid of all the other VHSs, but that was the one I kept. It also came in that fabulous TARDIS tin. Do you remember?
I never owned it, strangely.
Oh, call yourself a Doctor Who fan, man. With a different Doctor on the bottom of the tin, and I got Tom Baker on my one. So yeah, it was very kind to me, and that's why I love it.
Yeah, well, Doctor Who, you know, it's like we're talking about Doctor Who on the surface. Underneath, it is all linked to our lives. It's like Gary Russell said this at a panel at Who Reveal the other day. Tim Treloar was on the panel with him going, oh, I can't believe people like that. And I can't believe. And Gary said, but that's because you weren't 10 when you watched that episode. But it's what we all do, if we're not careful, with everything, is go, things were better in our day. And the fact is, it just depends. It's all what emotion is linked to it. But also, with regards to Doctor Who, you know, special effects and shit monsters and stuff, it's like, A, if you're that bothered about stuff like that, you're not. Why are you a Doctor Who fan? But also, yeah. I mean, it's like Stephen Gallagher said it. You don't go and watch a play and go, oh, I know I'm not in a real bedroom. They've just painted on the back, I can tell. It's you know, it's kind of Radio Plus sometimes. You still got watching a story, you're still allowing yourself to be transported. And if the writing's good and the performances are good, or they've got something to them, then the crap special effects kind of fall away anyway, or they're half the fun because they're so funny.
I wonder sometimes that's why I have a bit of an issue with some of the new series, where it is quite spectacular now and the production values are excellent. Because there was a sort of, you said the word play, there was sort of like a being in a theatre immediacy about the classic series, that sort of free wall set.
Yeah.
You know, that I really like. It's really cozy and it's really easy to sort of get comfortable watching.
Well, all that old TV, you know, I'm just rewatching I, Claudius at the moment,
which is
one of my favourite things ever.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to be a nerd with my wife who couldn't care less. I'm going, they're off Doctor Who. They're off Doctor Who. Doctor Who. And she's like, fuck off.
She'll do that mum thing of patting you on the head and say, go on, eat your tea, love, you know?
Yeah. But so Trial of a Time Lord, I, you know, and obviously, I, you know, I didn't like it at the time, but having rewatched, whenever I've rewatched it, it's a lot better than I thought at the time. But I still, you know, I mean, it's so much was going wrong behind the scenes as well. Mm. Like, I don't know if you'd be able to tell looking at it, but I think knowing what's going on behind the scenes, it feels like it's made. I just watching The Ultimate Foe, I was like, this is written by the whole thing's made by people who have stopped loving the show and are phoning it in a bit, writing wise. It feels like it's made by very old people.
Most classic Who was, you know.
Yeah, but who don't want to be there, you know? So it's just like, oh, I'm just going to put in lots and lots of literary quotes. And yeah, Mel's going to know who a character from The Tale of Two Cities is. And
I'll swing that around, though, because I think a lot of Trial of Time works. I think it's a really ambitious story. Mm. It's structured in an intriguing way. It's full of interesting twists, like Perry's death and the Valyar turning out to be the Doctor.
Yeah,
I think the production value for the time is more than acceptable. I think a lot of the guest stars that JNT chooses are really fun. So like, even if this isn't Doctor Who at its best, it's still got tons to recommend about it.
No, well, I think this is the magic of Doctor Who as well, is you kind of go, oh, I don't like that era. And then you go, oh my God, but Michael Jason. Yeah. As the Valyard,
Linda, the Oxo and lady, and my God.
yeah, and also Linda Bellingham. So it's always got something that just makes you Have you ever met Michael Jayston?
I have, yes. Well, not to say anything too inflammatory, but he was at a Doctor Who convention where he was making some very interesting political statements that were being recorded live on YouTube and went out to the entire world.
Oh, I'm not aware of those. Well, I just had a big long chat with him. He's a massive chain smoker. And so I don't smoke, but we're all outside because other people were smoking. And so I chatted to him while he had about 10 cigarettes in a go.
You know what I loved about him was he was so honest, right? Hanging out in the bar, right? And he goes, oh, I'm not waiting behind the scenes. He goes, all the fans are here and some of them might buy me a pint. Can I buy you a pint, Michael? You know?
Yeah. No, he seemed a lovely guy. No, we were there in LA with, here's my Doctor Who showbiz stuff, but mentioning Stephen Gallagher again, but it was the first time Steve had seen Michael Jayston since his first ever writing credit, a radio show, and Michael Jayston was in it. So as a sort of 22-year-old or something, that was the last time he'd seen him. And then he's there at a Doctor Who convention going, oh, I remember that. So they were chatting away about some old, and Michael remembered it, and, you know, some old Radio 4, I think. Know.
Jason's voice is still the best. He did some big finishes in the last couple of years. And, he's got such smooth villainy in his voice. He's gorgeous.
Yeah. Oh, he's amazing. Yeah, the Valiard is most definitely the highlight for me of the season 23. But it's a weird what-if as well. I've not listened to the sort of big finish Lost Stories from this era. I assume you have because you'd have reviewed them.
But it's a mixed bunch, I'd say.
Yeah. It's the fact that Wally K. Daly, who's a legend to me, like, I'm probably a writer because of Wally K. Daly, because when I was 19, I went on a course and he was like the tutor and showed us lots of clips of Casualty and Juliet Bravo and man chucking himself out of a window. And it always stayed with me. And I ended up with the same agent as him. And I thought, oh, I'm going to meet him. And then he died. So I never actually did.
I suggest that you don't seek out the ultimate evil then to listen to, because I mean,
you're not Wally K. Daly's finest hour.
No, I think it's spectacularly ill-judged. It has a sort of evil ray that the Doctor gets blasted with, and he runs around with a jagged bit of glass trying to kill everybody inside. It's a very bizarre story.
That would have been interesting for compliance at the time, wouldn't it? BBC compliance. So the Doctor's running around with a broken bottle, basically.
This might be a bold statement to make, but I actually think Trial of a Time Lord was the better option than the original season as planned.
And the fact that, you know, we lost Bob Holmes during the making of it, I mean, it must have just been like the worst time to work there. And, you know, we've worked with Eric Saywood. I like to hear, when I hear you on podcasts, you can't say his name either. Because I think it's say. I don't know
Sayward.
Now.
Sayward, yeah, it's Sayward.
Sayward.
Yeah.
I've been corrected so many times, and then every time I go to say it, I'm like, "How do you say his fucking name?"
I always say Saward, and it is
Yeah. But anyway, having worked with him, and I did an interview not so long ago with him for one of our things, and he's quite open about how unhappy he was at the end and how fond he was of Bob. So it must have just been crushing to like work there. Just
what's very strange is I think Eric Saul might have been having a bit of a breakdown during that time. I think he sort of admits that now. When the sort of creative force behind the show is that troubled, then the show itself is going to be a little troubled.
No, I mean, I just
think... But do you know what, as well, there is all the, I hate to say this, you know, but as a man who likes a bit of gossip, the behind-the-scenes stories for the Trial of a Time Lord are enticing. Those documentaries that are on the DVDs, I know I didn't choose the DVDs, it's ripe for the picking for me.
It's a troubled period of the show's history. I mean, cancelled, not cancelled, people dying, you know, and all the other things, all the other clash of personalities.
And yet, I love it. I love it.
Something's coming. A threat like no other. It will take a team of the most unlikely warriors in creation to defeat it. The universe is depending on you.
Gods and Monsters, Issue 1, Fausti, written by Stephen Gallagher, with art by Martin Geraghty. Issue 2, Sutekh, written by by Ian Winterton, with art by Adrian Salmon. And issue 3, Omega El Trala, by Mark Griffiths, with art from the legendary John Ridgway. An epic clash of good and evil that threatens to rip apart time and space.
So you already mentioned that the McCoy era was like your first one episode, and then it was done. And your whole sort of journey to the archaeology of Doctor Who. So your next thing I've got is the TV movie script book. So what was it, before we get onto the actual book, what was it like when the TV movie was coming, when you found out Doctor Who was coming back? 96.
I was super excited. I was a mad reader of Doctor Who magazine back then. And actually, when it came on, I did really, really enjoy it. I did. I was still, TV was coming on and it was getting a bit more stylish, and you know, the X-Files had come in and production values were on the rise for genre television. So it was sort of that right time for Doctor Who to come as this sort of glossy, no brains television movie with bucket loads of charm. But I specifically didn't choose the TV movie DVD. It's absolutely the script book that I want to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. So why the script book?
Well, you won't thank me for saying this, but the script book is the reason that I am in a relationship with my partner. So he is a mad lover of... So he came onto my podcast, and we clearly, there was a spark, as these things go. We both realized we loved the TV movie, and we would spend countless hours not recording a podcast and quoting this stupid bloody movie. And we went to Didcot, where they filmed the Android Invasion, and stayed the night, and we read out the entirety of that script book in the hotel room, pissed. And basically, that's where our relationship began. It was the TV movie script book that made us realise we were completely head over heels for each other. You know, there's barely any dialogue in this movie. It's just basically a list of instructions of how gorgeous the direction is going to be. And I just remember him reading out ridiculous lines by Daphne Ashbrook and Yi Ji So and Paul McGann and all, and looking at him across the hotel room going, I'm going to spend my life with that man. And so it means so much to me, that script book,
was your first kiss, Daphne and the Doctor.
Basically, we consummated our relationship with the Doctor Who TV movie. Yeah, script book.
I just love that. I mean, that is real life queer as folk, like.
I'll tell you what, it's the bizarrest thing being in a relationship with another Doctor Who fan, because I never have before. Yeah. When you get home from work and they're like, right, what Big Finish are we going to listen to tonight? I'm like, man, life doesn't get any better than this.
Sometimes people go, that's basically all, life would be better if they were a fan as well, but it doesn't always work out like that. Sometimes it's like, well, that's my thing. And it's good to have a bit of a barrier, but I think with you guys, it seems to be absolutely fine that you're both nuts for Doctor Who and other
things. Everyone can have sex, you know, Ian, but not everybody can read the TV movie in the dead of night, half cut, can they?
No. Oh, my God.
I will say as well, as a small bit of marketing for this episode that's going out, I do have 3 minutes of that reading out on YouTube. So I'm going to put in the link when you release it.
I was about to say, it's a shame that no one videoed that.
I did.
Yourself, but you actually did.
you can actually watch the moment we fell in love, you know. Oh, and it's during that wonderful bit where Grace Holloway is on the phone to the ambulance people. You know, I need a bed in psychiatrics. There's a madman in my house.
and you fell in love. Have you guys married?
No, we've only been together 2 years. I thought I'd test the waters and make it to 5 before I ask the question.
No, but in a way, but you've got to get married just so that you can show that clip and tell the story. Apart from it, no other reason. Just can you imagine?
We won't have any vows. We'll just start going, it was on my planet of Gallifrey when the master was finally put on trial. That will be our wedding vows, you know?
The whole book.
I told you there was a personal story for all of it.
That's such a lovely story. I mean, if you were, the apocalypse had happened and you'd ended up by yourself in a bunker, not with your beloved. You'd at least
I'll have the memories.
Have the script book. Or you're crying, going, doing.
I'll tear out the paper to wipe away the tears. Yeah.
You'll be doing his voice for the other parts. Were you Daphne or was he Daphne?
No, I was Daphne because I do a better American accent.
So he was McGann.
Yeah, he was McGann. Yeah, and he does a terrible Northern accent. Oh, and I was the master as well. You know, I always dress for the occasion.
Oh, God, he's amazing. My comics. Eric Robert, because we were at a con and he came up and said, "What's all this then?" And then we gave him some comics in return for a photo. And he was like reading them going, "Good stuff." So that was cool.
He's doing Big Finish Audios now, right? It's called Just Master with an exclamation mark. And honest to God, he's acting. It's absolutely zero effort for maximum impact. I mean, he's incredible, but it sounds like he's just picked up the script and gone, "Oh man, why don't you let me take over the world?" You know? But it's hilarious. It's glorious. Anyone, if you want to pick a Big Finish, go and listen to Eric Roberts.
Oh dear, no. Well, this really isn't good enough. Suffering satellites, I've travelled across time and space to face you, and now that I'm here, nothing. Aren't you even going to threaten to exterminate me, you know, with your ray gun sticks? Come along. Can't you poke your eye stalks out of issue 6 of Warp Warp? That's issue 6 of Warp Warp, the acclaimed Doctor Who fanzine, to present me with a bit of daring do? Some excitement, for pity's sake? I guess I can't blame them. I mean, it does celebrate 60 years of an unearthly child with a new interview with Carol Ann Ford, graphic reconstructions of the sets from Doctor Who's very first story, an extensive interview with Mark Gatiss about an adventure in space and time, plus Clive Doig, Brian Hodgson, comic strips, and oh, so much more. Heaven knows how they fit it all in. Do you know, I might take a look myself. Oh, yes. Yes, most exciting. All this plus a free disc containing, among other treats, a dynamic 18-minute animation of the much-loved alternative opening to Doctor Who, as told to David Whittaker in his classic 1964 novelisation, Doctor Who in an Exciting Adventure with the Daleks. Oh, I'm sorry. You see, we're all now too engrossed in this super new issue. There'll be no excitements from me or these tin terrors today. No deadly exterminations. Well, you know what they say. Warp Warp and no sleigh. Purchase your copy from warpwarp.co.uk now.
Finally, after years of badgering, I've been on a hamster on your book club.
Yeah, yes. Congratulations. You know, many have tried and failed.
Yeah, I'd still want to do a commentary at some.
Oh, you've got to. Well, just choose one.
I will do. One thing, other than your amazing self, your title music really makes stand out amongst the, because it's a crowded marketplace, is the Doctor Who podcast world. Where did you get such an amazing theme tune?
So nothing to do with me at all. Somebody came on and did a commentary and he said, "I can't believe you haven't got a theme tune. I want to do a theme tune for you." And he knocked that up in half a day. And I heard it and I was like, "Jeez, this is gold," you know? I think between the theme music and that stupid title, Hamster with a Blunt Pen Knife, I think those are the two things. Because, you know, I didn't realise when I thought of the title, when I took that quote out, that, of course, it comes with its own emoji.
Yeah. You know? Yeah,
So it's got its own little marketing tool on Twitter, which is great. But it's all accidental. It's nothing to do with me, really. It's just randomly choosing things that seem to have aligned well.
Anyway, I've been on your book podcast, and books,
you have
a massive part of your life and Doctor Who, anyway. So we have Mad Dogs and Englishmen by Paul Mars.
Oh yes, yes.
It's on our hamster book club as well, haven't you? So is it fresh in your mind?
It is. And I mean, I may... there's sort of one of five of the Eighth Doctor books I probably could have chosen. I've just read Mad Dogs and Englishmen, and it was like having... God, I mean, it's just pure pleasure. It's so funny. It's so clever. It's full of ideas. Do you know, on a complete side note, maybe you'll take this bit out. Paul Mars does this wonderful Facebook group called The Secret Salon, right, where he brings in sort of creatives. I mean, somehow I got added to this thing. And he's like, and he's an artist. And he goes, I'm going to draw people in the nude. Oh, honestly, he made me look spectacular in the nude, you know.
I hadn't heard about that side of things, but I follow him on Facebook, and I think I've said on your podcast, obviously he's another friend of Cutaway, so I know him in passing through Gareth, and we're doing Irish.
I'm not just being facetious though, like it was genuinely like artistic. It wasn't perfect in any way, shape or form.
No.
Although he may have given me about 5 extra inches, but it was incredible all the same.
He's a brilliant artist. I mean, he really is.
Brilliant artist, a brilliant novelist, a brilliant scriptwriter. He's such a talent, Paul Mars.
Lovely man. Absolutely lovely man as well. He's one of those, you know, forces for good in the world. And not just because he's absolutely fine with us doing stuff with Iris Wildthyme and the Katie Manning version. Because Katie's given us the go ahead to make her look like her in the comics, so that when we do the audio versions, it'll be Katie that's playing her again in that copyright never zone where Iris Wildthyme lives. Sometimes mentions the Doctor a lot, other times doesn't.
Yeah.
depending.
But that, I mean, that's all part of the joke, isn't it? The way she goes on about these ridiculous adventures that she's had that are dreadful parodies of Doctor Who stories. Yeah. She goes, I was in the Death Zone once with all the rubbish monsters, the Zarbi, the Mechanoids, you know, all coming after me. Oh, it's great. And actually, Iris does appear in Mad Dogs and Newsmen. That's not much of a spoiler because it's been out for 25 years now.
Surprised if she didn't, but without too many spoilers, because there's so much Doctor Who content out there that things like big finishes and novels, there's a big chance that people won't have seen them or read them. So what is the... I've not read it for years, but I remember loving it. And it's got the maddest cover, like a pink poodle, and it's the 100th...
The fact that they emblazoned,
yeah,
this is the 100th Doctor Who book on that absurd cover, when they just had Lawrence Mars's Adventures on Henrietta Street, which had a brilliant cover and was another fantastic book, but sort of a bit less camp and a bit more prestige. The fact that they chose Mad Dogs and Englishmen to celebrate 100 books. Oh, man. God bless you, Justin Richards, for doing that. The 8th Doctor run of books got me back into reading after an absence of about 10 years. I picked up The Eaters of Wasps, which is a very light, very easy, very traditional Doctor Who book, but it was easy to devour. And it really just enticed me to pick up the rest. I've not stopped reading since. So I thank that range a lot for that. But the thing about Mad Dogs and Englishmen is nobody really rates the 8th Doctor books. A lot of people put all the attention on the Virgin New Adventures because they had such a strong influence on the new series. But there's so much imagination, so much creativity in those books. And this is a spectacular example of that. I think it's brilliantly structured. I think it's very, very funny. It characterizes the Doctor, Fitz and Angie brilliantly. They're just such a wonderful team in this. It is insanely camp and ridiculous. But you know what? Newsflash, folks, a lot of Doctor Who is. I know you think it's all Genesis of the Daleks and Case of Androzani, but Doctor Who, more often than not, is Paradise Towers and the Horns of Nymon, alas. it's a spectacularly good book at a point where not a lot of people were reading them. So I chose it, one, because I just think those books need more focus, because they're some of the best Doctor Who you're ever going to experience. And two, I had such a blast during this period. For me, this was the first live Doctor Who. So those books were coming out one a month. I used to dash down to Waterstones. I can't remember what age I was. They found me a bit annoying, I think. I'll be there at the door sort of banging, saying, let me in. Is the Doctor Who book out yet? And then sort of throw a sickie from school and devour it on that day. I just love them. I continue to love them. I'm re-experiencing them now. You're going to be reading an 8th Doctor book very soon.
Yeah.
Which is similarly quirky.
But I think I said when I was on the Doomsday Weapon episode that came, it's already out. It's already out there. I don't know when this is going out, but that's already out there. But yeah, I've been inspired to, like, I think I'm going to start becoming addicted to 8th Doctor. I might go and start at the beginning. And
because I warn you, there is some terrible books in there as well. But
maybe
that's the way with Doctor Who.
Yeah, maybe off mic, I will ask for a reading list of the good ones. But it's just the fact that it sounds like there's good arcs and there's, you know, it's not just standalone adventures. And so that, you know, that really appeals to me.
But big ideas as well. Like this is a crazy book about, get ready for this. It's a rip on J.R. Tolkien, this fellow who's written this massive tome called The True History of Planets. It's supposed to be a piss take of Lord of the Rings and spent his life doing it. The Doctor gets involved because somewhere along the line, someone's gone in and changed this book, which is all about orcs and it's a magical world, to a book about pink poodles having a civil war. And so the Doctor has to send all of his companions out. And it's been made into a subversive movie as well. Mm. So there's a piss take of J.R. Tolkien, there's a piss take of George Lucas, and there's a piss take of Harryhausen within this book. It's very literate, it's very clever, and it's all sort of wrapped up in this very smooth, easy to read, incredibly funny prose. It seems like it's a very simple book. It's very smart. And it's just glorious.
That is Paul Mars all over. He's a very smart man. But it's just such an amazing cover. I remember Paul saying it was his direction to the artist was create the least Doctor Who cover you can. And then they stuck the 100th book on it.
Do you remember as well? Because that topped the poll that year as well. And, you know, the fans of Records or whatever the forum were in those days were in meltdown. How dare this top the DWM poll with this ridiculous camp pink poodle on the cover? Yeah. Oh, bless him. So that it then led to Paul to draw a picture of the fabulous poodle on the front with sort of dragging on a cigarillo or something like that. And he just wrote, "I'm so sorry, I broke Doctor Who by reminding you all that it's a bit silly," or something like that.
Free on DVD with issue 6 of Warp Warp.
I stopped the car at last and let the fog close in around
me. Brand new animation by Mel.
I knew I was somewhere on Barnes Common. And I had a suspicious idea it was the most deserted part as well.
Adapted from the opening chapter of Doctor Who and the Daleks by David Whittaker.
I'm Barbara. Barbara Wright. Susan. Susan was in the road.
A meeting on the common.
Oh my goodness.
I say, you there. Are you trying to get us all killed? There's petrol everywhere!
Featuring Stephen Noonan.
What are you doing here?
As the First Doctor. Out now. Order online at warpwarp.co.uk.
My second to last choice.
Second to last choice is Doctor Who and the Pirates. It's your big... I mean, before we get onto that, just Big Finish in general seems to be a massive, massive part of your life in terms of reviewing... You do. I listen to your Finish Big podcast. I mean, are you and your other half going through every Big Finish release?
Every.
Haven't you already done that?
One. I know, but now we're talking about it and recording it and putting it out for everyone. Well, we feel like we're doing the duty because I don't think anyone's going to be going looking for Fly Me to the Moon or Earth Search, Mind Warp or Judge Dredd. So if we can talk about it for them, they feel like they've done the whole experience without actually having to find these.
I was going to say that's something you've done. You've like, you're not just going Doctor Who's, you're literally, and this week we're in Mega City 1. And it's like...
Amazing. Those Judge Dredd audios, Ian, they are terrific. That's been my biggest surprise in doing Finish Big, is how good that very obscure spin-off is.
Well, I was a big Judge Dredd fan. It hasn't stayed with me as I've got older. Like Doctor Who's just grown and grown in a weird way. But Judge Dredd sort of slid away from me. Yeah, but I still affectionate about it. But I remember listening to the Big Finish and the Strontium Dog as well.
They're in there. Simon Pegg?
Well, I was about to say, I interviewed Simon Pegg when Shaun of the Dead came out. So he was all like on the cusp of becoming this biggest star, absolutely brilliant. And but me and him and Nick Frost were having a beer in this thing and talking. And you could just tell how they were like, oh, my God, the film is going down so well. You could see their lives changing before your eyes kind of thing.
Amazing.
And they were, you know, they were doing quite well anyway, but they're literally about to be propelled into, Simon especially, about to be propelled into Hollywood. A year later, he was like besties with Tom Cruise and stuff like that. But yeah, there's me talking to them about all these different things. And then they're such proper geeks. That's the whole thing. A bit like you, you don't do it with any sort of end goal. You just do what you like. All they'd done was what they like. So you're there talking to them going, oh, and you end up talking about how would you survive a zombie apocalypse. And I said, yeah, we do the same thing with, how would you survive Triffids or Daleks? And then we ended up discussing all these different threats. And then I said, oh, and I really liked you as Johnny Alpha and what's his name? Wolf Sternhammer from Strontium Dog in your big film.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God, someone listened to it.
Someone listened to it. Oh, bless
him. He's there about to like become one of the biggest stars this country's produced almost in some way.
Yeah, he got to do it all, didn't he? Star Trek, Star Wars, Doctor Who. He did the whole lot.
I mean, yeah, he is, like he always says, he's one of us. And he got to be in not so long after, that brilliant bonfire of Star Wars figures after the Phantom Menace. Hold it against him.
You weren't there at the beginning. You don't know what it was like. So take your 50p and bugger off. Oh, space was so good.
Oh, it really was.
It came at just the right time and they cut it exactly when they should have done.
Absolutely stunning TV. And have you ever watched it with the homage? The homage.
I have, yeah.
It's like subtitles, but for the homages.
My favourite is what's her face? Hello, Brian. Marsha, she's wonderful.
I'm always quoting her. Whenever I'm going out, I'm always going, oh, I'm just off down Freshers to do
shop. The weekly shop.
Absolutely brilliant. But so Big Finish anyway.
Oh yeah, sorry. I don't know how we got there.
You get into Big Finish, Joe?
Was it? No, I had the cassette, so I didn't get the first series of Bernice, but Sirens of Time, so I was buying the cassettes way back in the day.
Have cassettes? I mean, as in, was this...
There was for a period, a very small period. They did two cassettes per release, and it was up for maybe the first 15 or something like that, and then they went to CDs after that.
God, they've seen all of technology.
I mean, it's what, 20 odd years old now. Technology does move on a bit.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it's nearly 25 years since they started doing it, isn't it? So it's incredible.
The bad side of it all is it's gone digital now, isn't it? So it's just so easy to pirate. So it's a tricky situation they're in now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the same of all audio. It's people just aren't willing. Well, people are willing to pay, but so many other people aren't. So. Yeah. So it's just, I think, like with all things, you just sort of have to make it so easy to spend your money, like with the app and everything, so that, like same with the streaming and everything. People stopped going to torrents and stuff because as much, like everyone used to go to torrents, and then they made it, for $5.99, you can get loads and loads of stuff on your streaming services, and that stops the piracy.
When we get to that point, Ian, where we thought we could get something for nothing, that people's hard work we can just steal. I mean, it's just crazy.
No, it really is. It's just we've had like 25 years of it now, haven't we, of people. I suppose when I was a kid, I had a tape-to-tape hi-fi that my parents bought, and I pirated computer games on my tape deck and sold them at school. So I'm evil too.
Back in the day, I used to get VHSs, and try and for Blockbuster Video and put a Scartley between two videos and try and tape the VHS onto a blank tape. So I'm just as bad.
Oh, we had this hi-fi and it was so quick, computer games, borrow a computer game off somebody and you have it on your blank tape. And
I mean, I suppose if you are borrowing something from a friend, it's not piracy, but it's the same thing, isn't it? You're not paying to listen to it. You're just...
It is piracy. Stand-up I saw once said, the whole, you wouldn't steal a handbag, you wouldn't steal a car.
Oh, do you remember those adverts? Yeah.
He was like, well, I wouldn't steal a handbag or steal a car, but if I could clone a car and that car would still be there...
I would do it, I would.
But anyway...
I think the pirates is back in the day when this was less prevalent, like people just bought the CDs.
Yeah.
With Big Finish, because I started with the blog reviewing Big Finish, it feels like I'm coming full circle, and it's really a fantastic opportunity to. And I did say to Mark when we started it, we need to do this with integrity, so we need to be honest. I don't want us to be one of these, because there's a lot of review sites out there that just say every Big Finish release is amazing. And I'm sorry, they bring out a lot of content. Not all of it is amazing. So I said, if we don't like it, we'll say why we don't like it and we'll be very honest about it. But the main purpose is to celebrate this company and what they bring out.
You can be, like we said at the beginning, you can be critical without being a bastard about it, you know. And there's no point being a critic if your opinion can't be trusted either. If everything's good, then you might as well not, we don't need to hear you, because we don't know when you're being honest and when you aren't.
A few of my opinions are a bit controversial, though, you know, because there was one particular actress that I really am not keen on. And I do say it quite, it's become a running joke. And now people call me a hater and all this, you know, no. all in good faith. But
who's that?
Sophie Aldred.
Oh, no.
I think she's a really unconvincing audio actress. And, you know, that's an opinion. It's just one opinion. But we fight about that all the time because he thinks she's great. So
I think she's, I mean, it's not just because we've worked with her as well on, we've got lots of commentaries of her. She's lovely.
Yeah, she is. No aspersions on her character. Wait, Sophie Aldred.
I always think, you know, when she came back in, Power of the Doctor, and there's that beautiful scene between her and Sylvester, yeah. and he's apologizing for what happened, and you have to have this. So every family is probably looking at that with a different head on, going, what's he apologizing for? And in my head, it's the end of Love and War. Everyone, you know, you have your own head canon.
But there's so many Ace stories now, it could be anything.
Yeah. And she's been killed in the comics, she's this and that.
On screen, yeah, I've got no issues at all. I think she's very charismatic, and she was shot in the arm for the end of the classic series. Just feel like audio acting is a different beast, and I feel like you have to heighten it a bit but still be naturalistic, and she just heightens it to a point where I don't buy it. That's my issue.
Yeah, I've never had an issue. But I was going to say, but it's not just Love and War, the novel, which is probably my favorite Doctor Who novel. I just think it's brilliant. But the Big Finish version, I absolutely love.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
Ending of, with her, that's some proper balls to the wall acting, that is.
I would suggest you have two paracetamol on hand, though, because she does do a lot of screaming in the second half of Love and War. But it's a good performance. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It's absolutely brilliant. So to me, that's always sort of ace. So I kind of had, if that was actually Ace's exit, and we know even in the Virgin New Adventures, she goes back and is all gruff and unconvinced.
Oh, new Ace, yeah. Yeah. What were they thinking?
For me, it's almost like, I remember saying at the time, God, just don't bring her back. Like, leave her there.
Do you remember they turned her into that sex object in that sort of leather fetish costume?
There was some,
with all of her tits out on the covers and things. I'm like, what are they doing to Ace? Come on now. She was never this.
The Virgin New Adventures were a very dodgy time. It was the Wild West. It's
written by a lot of horny full 13-year-olds, weren't they?
Yeah, well, people in their mid-20s. Brains of 13-year-olds, I think. But, you know, but some amazing writers, but also...
For sure, yeah.
But I mean, we'll have to cover a Virgin New Adventure that I haven't read or haven't read for a long time on your book club.
Man, you keep reading them. I'll keep having you back.
I've got very mixed feelings about the new adventures, and Doctor Who being grown up in any way whatsoever, I just don't think it should.
It's a tricky place to go. Yeah,
I always think Doctor Who, and I say this about Torchwood as well. Even though Torchwood individual episodes are good, I don't think anything to do with Doctor Who should be passed a 12 certificate, really, because it's a show for the family and it can be really scary and be a 12. But if it's anything past that, then you're a kid, can't go and watch Torchwood and know what's going on.
I think like sort of we can walk that line of 12 and sort of flirt a little bit either way.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it should never be in 15 territory.
No, but lots of Torchwood was, and lots of Virgin New Adventures was. And
Love and War gets away with, you know, because like you said, it's a very it's a great drama, but it's about these enormous great aliens that, you know, suck the life out of planet, so it ain't too serious.
No. And I think Paul's, I mean, he's a great writer, and he understands the sort of tone, which is, you know, PG / maybe occasionally 12, is where Doctor Who lives. And anything other than that, it's not Star Trek, is it?
I could be the only person who has a bit of an on-off relationship with Paul Cornell's writing, but that's for another day.
Oh, that's another. There were so many. There were other people for you to read. But anyway, Doctor Who and the Pirates.
Oh yeah, that. Yeah.
And Rayner. I've never heard this.
Do it tomorrow.
So what's it about, other than pirates?
It is a sublime piece of audio drama. It's all told. So part three is Doctor Who the musical. If you ever thought Doctor Who couldn't pull off a musical, go listen to part three of this, because you've got, they brought in some like proper musical talent to put that episode together. And they wait until part three, because I think if they went in singing Gilbert and Sullivan songs, we would have been in a bit of trouble. It's a story that Evelyn goes to visit at one of her old students at university and recounts the story of when her and the Sixth Doctor had a pirate adventure. And you don't realize for like a couple of episodes, why on earth, the student keeps going, why are you telling me this story? But the joy of it is the story plays out as she remembers it rather than how it happened. So she's constantly changing the details as the story goes along. So she's changing the names of characters. She's going, hang on a minute, you said that person's name was Tom Thompson, not John Johnson. She goes, well, it's John Johnson now. And then all the characters stop acting again with this new character. So narratively, it does really, really clever things because there's no consistency to it at all. She's sort of making it up on the fly. And you realise that she's gone to tell her the story because it's about a loss that Evelyn suffered. She gets very close to this kid on the pirate ship called Jem the Cabin Boy, who gets murdered by the pirate, who is played by Bill Oddie, in a really shocking sequence. And Maggie Stables' acting in that is really great.
Did you say Bill Oddie?
Bill Oddie plays the pirate, yeah. He's incredible. He's going full on, arr. But when the moment comes and he has to be completely psychotic and murder this kid, it's a really scary moment. And so she's had a big loss. And it turns out that the girl has had a big loss as well. And so she's basically trying to make her feel better because she cares about her. So it's playing with some very raw, very real emotions on the one hand. And on the other hand, it's an incredibly funny comedy because of the story that she's making up. It's so outrageous and full of every piratical cliche you could imagine. And then in the middle of this, where all of the big twists hit, it turns into a musical where Colin Baker, Maggie Stables, Helen Rayner, all these wonderful people get to sing songs. And it's a bit like Buffy's Once More Feeling. Mm. Through the course of singing the songs, they reveal important plot points as well. It's just an incredible piece of work.
I'm going to have to go to my Big Finish app and spend some money.
I think you'll love it. Mostly it's very funny.
Is it quite an old one anyway?
It's in the first 50, so it's quite an old one.
$2.99, isn't it?
It's very cheap, yeah.
Hoovering those $2.99s up.
If you've got Spotify, it's free, so it's on there.
Oh, really? I don't know. Oh, if you pay for Spotify?
Yeah, it's literally the first 50 are free on there.
Oh, I didn't know that. Why didn't I know that?
But the other reason I chose this one is because it highlights Colin Baker and Maggie Stables as the Sixth Doctor and Evelyn, who were like the golden couple of those first 100 releases. They took a hold of a character that, you know, you acknowledged wasn't working on television, revolutionized his character. So he won the Doctor Who poll somewhere in those first couple of years of Big Finish of the best Doctor. So they completely turned him around. They gave him something I've always wanted Big Finish to do, and that's a old lady companion. And they just made it sing. Their chemistry is great. So just as a great example of those two characters together, it's a wonderful story as well. It makes you feel, it makes you laugh, and it makes you sing.
And I've read that Colin's a very good singer in this as well. Which
he sings a song, right? The cliffhanger is the music starts rising, and Evelyn goes, "Oh no, you are going to sing!" And he goes, "Yes, I am." Oh, and then the music cuts in as if that's the worst possible thing that could ever happen. Like that's the danger. That's the cliffhanger moment.
Oh my god.
And then he sings a song called "I Am the Very Model of a Gallifreyan Buccaneer," where Jacqueline Rayner throws in about 250 continuity references in a 3-minute song.
Oh, wow. I'm probably going to listen to this tonight.
He even has a line when he goes, what is it? He goes, Hecate. And he goes, Hecate? Hecate? I'm not sure that's canonical. And then he jumps into the next. It's terrific.
A reference to K9 and Company.
It certainly is, yes.
I've I remember being scared of that episode. Hecate, Hecate, Hecate. Whether yeah,
and you won't regret buying it though.
Oh my god, I'm definitely going to buy that. Yeah, because it's weird the redemption of Colin Baker, because I don't think I interviewed him, god, 20 odd years ago, and he sort of said, oh, and I'm absolutely loving. So he must have been, what was it, 2000? Yeah, it was like 2001 or something. I interviewed him, and he was just, oh, I'm absolutely loving doing Big Finish, and it's like the scripts. Well, let's just say they were a million times better than the rubbish I had to do on TV. So, you know, so that's, you know, so he's been quite open about, you know, but yeah, but it has sort of given him that extra, this is the Doctor we could have had if he wasn't wearing a silly coat and it wasn't a difficult time. And
it's been providing work for all of those older Doctors, Big Finish, but yeah. It's sort of revolutionized Colin and Paul McGann, certainly. Oh. Their Doctors just came to life on audio in a way I don't think anyone really expected.
No. Well, for me, McGann's the, because there's so much Big Finish, but McGann is the strand. I don't miss one. I've listened to everyone. That, as far as I'm concerned, is the Ninth Doctor's time. And he was a Doctor a long time, wasn't he? Because yeah. He's still
a
going.
Long time.
But like Stranded is just amazing. And you know, the more recent stuff. And I just love the Sheridan Smith years.
Oh, boy, they are gold, aren't they? Right, well, we hit those for Finish Big. We'll have you on.
Out now from Cutaway Comics, part 2 of the Gods and Monsters saga.
And so I am banished.
Sutek.
Robbed of physical form. Set adrift in the black void between galaxies. Not for the first time, for I am Sutek, destroyer, sworn enemy of all creation. And creation has many defenders. But this defeat feels different. Something new gnaws at what remains of my diminished soul. Not merely defeat, but something I dare not even name.
Sutek. Sutek. Sutek, hear me.
Next, this.
Yes, O brother husband, let my voice guide you back to me and home to Neticatet.
The land of the dead, and yet for me, it means life, a reprieve, and for the first time in millennia, a body.
In this place, you will always have form, or the appearance of form. But this you know, I have been granted permission to save you, but not restore you.
You. Always were weak, sister wife. Sentimental. The others would have let me die.
And they would have been justified in doing so. You were brought into this universe to bring chaos and suffering and death. But as part of the greater whole, you played a role in the balance of all things. And then, brother, husband, you forgot your place.
I declared war on all life.
You went insane. Even I, my love, wished death upon you. Only now...
You need my insanity.
Yes.
Who do you want me to kill?
An animated version of this trailer, starring Gabriel Wolf as Sutek and Zoe Iqbal as Nephthys, is one of the features on the VAM disc that comes free with the comic, only when you purchase direct from us at cutawaycomics.co.uk. After Big Finish, we're on to your last one, and all the way up to date. This is quite controversial. I mean...
Yeah, great. I love a bit of controversy.
But Flux, not quite the latest Doctor Who, but almost.
No.
Latest bar Sea Devils and Power of the Doctor. But other than that, this is the latest iteration of Doctor Who on TV. Jodie Whittaker.
Yes.
It's a mad old... I can't say I chimed amazingly well with the Jodie Whittaker era, but there were... I almost wanted to, just because there were so many dickheads around really screaming about it. There was one at the convention who revealed the other day, just absolutely so angry with people for even daring to like this era.
It's so strange, isn't it?
About television, then. If you like this, you know nothing about television. And I'm like, for fuck's sake.
Very bizarre. I went to a convention recently where Mandit Gill was one of the guests, and her queue was four times the length of anybody else's. Yeah, so that fallacy that this era isn't popular is not true.
LA. It was like the Beatles had arrived.
Exactly.
Went nuts. Like the screaming. I like lots about the Jodie Whittaker era. It's not hugely for me, but it was a massive reinvention. I sometimes think people just need to calm down and go, you're going to get used to it. Because I remember not liking Peter Davison, and then you look back and, it's because we're used to him. And it's that same thing again and again and again. And you'd think Doctor Who fans would get used to the fact that it's a new Doctor and you're going to... be used to this being the Doctor any minute now. I mean, for me, Jodie was the Doctor immediately, because she dropped out onto that train and said, I don't know, I was an angry Scottish man 2 minutes ago. And I just thought, and I just remember clapping my hands and going, she's the Doctor. Fine. So I've never had a problem with her as the Doctor. But I think because it was a real reboot, soft reboot, wasn't it? I do prefer it when Doctor Who has its DNA. And you have a companion and a new Doctor, and it kind of, I always think it just works that little bit better if you change it. You can change so much of it, but you know, when you have that continuity. But, but the fact it basically did a full John Pertwee bang with somewhere new, you don't know anybody.
It was bold. I wouldn't call it a soft reboot. I'd say it was a complete rewrite of what the show was doing in the previous era.
I guess it's soft in the... It's not like nothing that's gone before hasn't happened.
It was certainly a softer show compared to the very loud, very energetic, a bit too sexy Stephen Moffat era. Suddenly we were being a bit more subtle. The characters were a bit normal. The stories were linear and paced in a gentler way, But I think we'd had 6 years of that. So it was time for something a bit different.
But it's weird because I did like all that. And I really liked the first season of Jodie Whittaker. And I think I would have liked it a lot more. I mean, obviously, I'm saying this from a place of love and I appreciate stuff. I think if his first season and his second season, and I still can't get on board with The Timeless Child. I'm still too light. I don't know. It still goes round and round in my head that, oh, no, please, God, no. It's just awful. I mean, I know it's just a TV show, but I still think William Hartnell should. Now it's been going this long, we should still have a thing where the first Doctor was the one that we saw with William Hartnell. And there was...
He dropped a bomb, didn't he? He dropped a bomb. Everyone said he played it safe, and then he dropped the biggest bomb he could have done.
I know. I maybe it's just because I'm a, crusty old man, but... I liked it when he was playing it safe. It wasn't safe, but it was. But he didn't need to. I don't think he needed to do all that. And then it's weird because after all the timey-wimeyness of Moffat, it was like, actually, this is nice having 45 minutes that bloody work. But then he sort of ended up with Flux, which was mad.
Yes. Just
mad, which is your choice. And there's loads to love in Flux. And I liked it a lot more on a rewatch recently than I did. I didn't mind it when it was going out, but I was a bit like, this is getting a bit, it's running away with itself a bit. But again, sometimes when you watch stuff and you go, so it might not have been very good for the casual viewer at all, but not, who needs to worry about that anyway? But the fact that it's better on a second viewing is maybe a criticism of a piece of television that's supposed to be for family to sit down with. If you sit down with really good Doctor Who, which is why I think Russell T. Davies is like the best of all worlds.
Russell T. Davies understands that Doctor Who is for everybody, and it's not just for Doctor Who fans. Moffat and Chibnall made Doctor Who for Doctor Who fans.
Yeah, and
it's a mistake, I think.
But ultimately, if I had to choose, I would rather have Doctor Who being massive. But also, for me, I judge everything, A, by what I'd want to watch, but also I have three children. Every single one of them. The oldest is 15 and then 14 and then my youngest is 8. Every single one of them, when you say who's your doctor, they say Christopher Eccleston, David Tennant, because they go back and they've got it all available. They're the ones they watch. They can watch whatever they want. They very rarely go outside. They very rarely watch after David Tennant because...
In terms of the wider audience, it's almost been the law of diminishing returns with each subsequent Doctor maybe capturing the outsider. And Matt Smith, I think, did initially, and then people got a bit bored of that. And then Peter Capaldi people pushed against, and then Jodie Whittaker having the temerity to be a woman, you know, people really pushed against that.
Flux. You after the apocalypse, you're literally going to have flux. You're going to... No John Pertwee. No Tom Baker, no William Hartnell,
nope.
No Troughton, no Peter Davison, none of this, no unit stories.
Well, there is a unit story in there, technically.
Oh, yeah, that is true. Yeah, you can, there's the Brigadier slightly in there, yeah.
Yeah, he gets one line, yeah.
But what is it that's made the Flux make your list?
Where do I start with this extraordinary season of Doctor Who, which coincidentally is the longest running Doctor Who story since Trial of a Time Lord. So maybe a lot of thing about these long extended seasons. I know a little bit about what occurred behind the scenes when the Flux was being made, and the pandemic made it fucking chaotic. The fact that this series is as good as it is, made under those extraordinary circumstances, people were risking their lives to make Doctor Who for us in a difficult time. Like, I think it's extraordinary that it looks as good as it does, given what was happening in the outside world. Jodie Whittaker is a fantastic Doctor Who, and in a very dark time, she was a ray of sunshine on the television. That thing she did in the closet for the kids, when she was like, kids, we're going to get through this. I mean, there was nobody better to see us through that. If Peter Capaldi had been the Doctor during the pandemic, we would have been in a lot of trouble, you know. Kids, you're all going to die, you know. Like, it would have been a bad time.
Your parents.
I think it's the third season thing that most new series Doctor have, in that they really just sing in their third season. And Whittaker dances her way through this season. She can do the exposition. She can insult monsters. She's in action sequences. She's funny. She's dramatic. She's got fantastic chemistry with Mandip Gill and John Bishop. Like, she's amazingly good. In story terms, you've got a Doctor Who story that's 6 hours long that covers everything that Doctor Who does. It's got a fantastic historical story. War of the Sontarans, I'm perfectly convinced, is one of the best new series stories. I love it. It's got brilliant science fiction, and it's got great stuff taking place in contemporary Earth. It brings in old Doctor Who monsters in a really exciting way. I don't think the Angels have been much better than they are in Village of the Angels, apart from Blink. And the Sontarans, you may lose your viewers now, they've never been better than they are in Flux. Like, they are the big bad guys of the Flux. They managed to take out the Daleks and the Cybermen fleet in one brave tactical move. They're incredible. I think visually it's as striking as Doctor Who's ever looked, because they couldn't go out on expensive location shoots. They were forced to do lots of CGI and build incredible sets that they could sort of contain people in. So Doctor Who looks weirder and more sort of unusual than it has. We've got all of these vast landscapes. So it feels like it's taking place on a huge, huge scale.
Yeah.
I think it knocks the cliffhangers out of the park. Somewhere between series 12 and 13, I wonder if it's John Bishop, you know, he's casting an eye over the scripts and going, you know what, Chris, this ain't very funny. So he's in there adding comedy lines, because Flux is very, very funny. It starts off with that brilliant scene of the Doctor and Yaz hanging upside down on that pole, and she's trying to do the Scottish accent to get the cuffs off.
Yeah.
And the comedy just runs through the series from that point on.
Yeah. Well, I think Carvin Easter is the Michael Jason of Flux, because he's the thing that we'll be talking about in 50 years.
But look at all the guest characters. That's a good choice there. Carvinista, you've got brilliant Swarm and Azure, excellent villains. Yeah. You've got Bell and Vinda, who I really, really like. Mary Seacole in that second episode is wonderful. Yeah. What Kevin McNally's Eustatius Jericho in the second half of the season, who's wonderful. Look, I don't think it's perfect. I think there's some moments where he's got to do too much too quickly. So there is a fair amount of exposition, especially in stuff like Survivors of the Flux. But I think it's television for now. And you and I are both classic Doctor Who fans, yeah? So we like Doctor Who paced a certain way. This is television for kind of a younger audience now. It's full of clickbaity twists and images. It's furiously paced. There's tons going on. I think this is what Doctor Who should be doing.
Well, I agree in lots of ways, and I think Russell T. Davis will do this times a thousand.
Yeah.
I'm a classic Doctor Who fan who quite unusually absolutely loves New Who. Like, I used
Me
to
too.
More than classic Who. Now I probably think it's probably 50-50. But one thing I was saying about my kids, all of them watch Flux. They all watched Flux and didn't miss an episode. They hadn't missed an They hadn't watched the teenagers. Hadn't watched Doctor Who since, you know, Matt Smith. And suddenly they're watching it again when it's... They didn't mind dipping into Jodie Whittaker's era. So I think it worked on that level. And then Flux, they watched every episode and were like, you know, because they don't live with me, they were like phoning me up from their house going, oh, we just watched Flux. Wasn't it cool? It was cool. And that's when the Mary Seacole one, especially.
Chipper, that's great to hear. But Chibbers wanted to write a longer season, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. There was an interview the other day on a podcast, and he sort of talks a bit openly about how they had all these plans, and a big finish will probably be doing the lost in 13 and a few decades from now. But
I was scared, you know, because I went on that podcast last week, and I said, if you dare put me on after Chibnall, I said, there'll be some trouble because your ratings are going to have the biggest drop they've ever had.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, but it's a really interesting interview, isn't it? But just sort of saying, you know, Flux was, because I kind of suspected that, but just saying openly, yeah, Flux was COVID, you know, was a COVID. And you go, I kind of thought that at the time. And how much... I'd like to have a more honest conversation with him though, like a really in-depth one, industry one, and just go, because I do think how many people was he trying to keep in work and things like that? Because I think if you were just story first, you would go, unfortunately, we've lost six. We were down to like six episodes. We're gonna have to lose some of these characters. And you know, because it did feel overstuffed. It did feel like some people, if you were really cutting it, you could really have cut it back and got rid of a few characters and things like that.
Whenever I put Flux on, okay, I start with the Halloween Apocalypse. I end with the Vanquishers. I watch the whole thing through every time.
No.
And my interest rarely dips.
Yeah. No, it is brilliant fun. It's brilliant fun. I mean, being an old Christy fart, that a lot of the tension revolves around Tatooine and Timeless Childish stuff still makes me go...
That's Barbara Flynn. How dare you?
I know. Just put up with Cracker all those years.
And, boy. Do you remember that scene where she was in the house and the rapist with the terrifying mask grabbed her in the house? That stuck in my head ever since I was a child. That absolutely ruined me as a child, that scene.
Cracker is just some of the best TV ever made. Amazing.
Some of the best thing Christopher Eccleston ever did as well was Cracker, wasn't it? Remember that Hillsborough one?
Oh, God, yeah, yeah. Well, this is a spoiler for Cracker, which was made 30 years ago.
A long time ago.
But yeah, yeah. Jimmy McGovern sort of, he said, oh, he did a really good exit for what's his name, who, you know, sort of kills himself at the end. And then he said, oh, I was trying to persuade Chris to come on. I'll have to give you a really good fucking death as well, will I? And and so he writes it knowing that they're going to go, be unable to resist it. But that, his last scene in Cracker is, my God.
Oh, unforgettable. I mean, a lot of it is, isn't it?
Oh, it's just, yeah, some of the best TV. I love Jimmy McGovern. But anyway, back to Flux. And
well, back to, you know what, you're talking about some of the best moments in television. That cliffhanger to Village of the Angels, where she turns into the angel. That's one of the best ever Doctor Who cliffhangers, I'm convinced.
No, it was a brilliant cliffhanger and it made me go, whoa. And I didn't like that it was dealt with so weirdly the next week. Like,
oh, that was all the cliffhangers in Flux. So the cliffhangers themselves were brilliant. All the resolutions were a bit lame. But you know what? We've watched Classic Who a long time. We're kind of used to that now.
Time. I'm going to kill you now, Doctor, with a big sword.
Oh, yeah. No, terrible.
Hey. it doesn't like, it's not the crime of the century, but I just thought having her turn into an angel, but part of me did think, was she supposed to be away for a whole episode and
maybe
have that Yaz and Jericho without the Doctor for a whole hour in the 20th century? And things
by all accounts, behind the scenes, this season was improvised at every turn. So the fact it's as coherent and as entertaining as it is, it's a miracle. It shouldn't be, but it is.
Yeah, yeah. They're, you can sort of tell they're writing on the fly, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, this is why, you know, it's made by absolute some of the best professionals in the business, but under absolute pressure. And it comes out as a thing that's going to be watched for while there's human civilization, so it's not bad, you know. Doctor Who will be the only thing last. Well, you know, people are going to watch Doctor Who for a long, long time, and so Flux will be one of the sort of, you know, will be one of the sort of highlights of that rewatch.
It's so in that era, you get the first series of sort of standalone stories. Then you get the second series, which is the sort of arc-based season that we're used to, where it's sort of gently leading up to the finale. And then you've got the third season of the Flux series, which is such a densely structured piece of work. I think the Flux is probably the most unique thing this new series has done. And I know that is accidental and it wasn't intended, but I do think it should be celebrated for being as good as it is. Yeah.
No,
made under those circumstances.
I mean, some Doctor Who fans, we are a bit too serious. I take it seriously, but I also kind of, you know, I kind of know they're just creative decisions as well. I'm a writer myself, so I might not like that creative decision, but I don't think it doesn't mean they need to be put in the stocks or anything. They've just made a decision I might not have made myself, but you know, it is just a TV show.
And, oh, I know. We do forget that sometimes, don't we?
Do. But I still find the Timeless Child troubling. It does still make me grind my teeth.
Don't go listen to my episode of that then. I found someone who loved that one.
Yeah, well, it's all fine. And I can also see the potential. And I still, even though I didn't like the idea, rewatching Once Upon Time, which I rewatched yesterday, I actually still found myself going, oh my God, she's in the past. And I almost accepted that the Doctor's got this big lot of past. And it's still when you see Jo Martin in the mirror. Even someone like me, who's really still struggling with the Timeless Child, I still get a bit of a buzz off realizing she's Jo Martin. And so to someone who's accepted it, that is amazing TV.
Actually, it's interesting you bring up Once Upon a Time, because that's another thing I love about this season, is I feel like the Halloween Apocalypse feels very much like a Russ T. Davies opener. It's sort of light, gentle. It's got lots of humour in it. It's introducing fun characters. So it feels like a sort of Partners in Crime-y, sort of Smith and Jones-y sort of vibe. Once Upon a Time is pure Moffat. It's non-linear. It's mad as a box of frogs. It's got 100 ideas in it. It's doing huge world building. And then obviously you get the usual Chibnall stuff in the last two. So it's almost like a bit of all the showrunners in there as well.
It is a phenomenal piece of work. Flawed.
I'm being selfish because by choosing Trial of a Time Lord and Flux, I get to watch a lot more Doctor Who than those people that just chose single stories.
Yeah, except you've chosen lots of books and you've chosen two books. So,
It's nice to be diverse as well, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that's another thing. Everyone does get into this and take it seriously and go, well, do I just want like five Pertwees? Or do I want mix of...
lots it's not people haven't just been choosing TV ones, have they?
No, most people haven't, actually.
Oh, Neil, that's right, then.
Chosen a big finish. Someone's even chosen toys. So, Arthur Bostrom chose his Dalek toys. So, you know.
I can completely understand that, you know.
Yeah, his toys from 1963 that he used to have from being part of Dalek Mania.
Has anyone chosen the John and Gillian strips back from the first Doctor's era?
I've only just become aware they even exist from reading Warp Warp.
I hope somebody does, you know.
Oh, maybe one day. I mean, you know, well, the one I'm recording tomorrow, it's Time and the Rani as one of the options.
Oh, but who's doing that?
Darren Scott, editor of SFX magazine.
Man, clearly a man of distinction and taste.
That's what I'm recording tomorrow, and that'll probably be episode two.
I did tell you, didn't I? Anything that comes after this is going to be gold, because, you know, this is going to be the worst episode you put out. So.
Silly, don't be silly. You're Doctor Who fandom royalty, Jay. Look, for the listeners, he's just gone very red.
I don't know what to do with a compliment, but thank you.
Oh, dear, dear, dear. Anyway, we had better wrap this up. But it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Joe. I'm actually a fan. And like I said at the top of the show, I probably wouldn't be doing this if I hadn't sort of got into your show during COVID and then every other Doctor Who podcast I can lay my hand on after that. Like Time Lash, I love Time Lash.
It's a slippery slope.
Funny, it is a slippery slope. But you and on the Time Lash are probably my favourites.
You listen to the Kinder? Because Mark Donaldson just came on and did Kinder for Hamster.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's already out, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, I listened to that. Yeah. No, it's brilliant. But
I say it's been an absolute delight getting cozy down in your bunker. You know.
I know. Let's hope the rad levels drop to safe levels soon, and you can merge blinking.
You can send me out like a canary, you know. If I expire, then just stay in here, all right?
Yeah. You'll just come out only quoting Doctor Who TV movie lines. That's all you'll be able to say.
What a life.
Almost your life now. But
pretty much. You said something that scared me then. You said you're going to lose your voice. I was like, that's all I've got, mate. Don't take that from me.
But anyway, Joe Ford, it's been an absolute bloody pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's been amazing.
We can cut there. I'll probably do that.
Hey.
Fading it.
No, that was fun.
You have been listening to The Bunker from Cutaway Universe. Your host has been Ian Winterton. Produced by James Stevenson of Bamalan Productions. Gods and Monsters advert voiced by Brian Blessed. All music by Paul Phillips. For more on Cutaway and to buy online, visit cutawaycomics.co.uk or follow us on Twitter at Cutaway Universe.